Hello, welcome to the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm your host, Matt Cavallo. We're live here at the Plaintree International Conference on Patient-Centered Care. I have with me today Amy Edmonds. Amy is the founder and CEO of Young Stroke, and we're excited to talk to her today and learn more about her experience and about her organization. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, and I'm delighted to be here with you today.
Well, we're excited to have you here, and before we get going, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I am a 15-year stroke survivor, and immediately following my stroke, I enrolled in graduate school, and my studies led me to understand that one of the reasons that there was so little discussion about stroke among young adults in America is because we had no one really serving as a voice of advocacy for our unmet needs. And so, being the overachiever that I am, as a part of my thesis, I said if I ruled the world, I would create an organization and I would call it Young Stroke. And I would be an advocate for the unmet needs of not only survivors, but also our caregivers. And so, pretty much as a lark, I applied for a 501c3, and I actually received the IRS determination letter during the week of my commencement from graduate school.
Oh, wow.
So it was like the ultimate graduation gift.
So let's rewind the clock a little bit.
Sure.
Before the education. So you mentioned that you had a stroke when you were younger. Can we go back to that day and relive what happened?
Certainly. It was a Saturday morning, January the 11th, and I happened to be in the company of my mother, and we were having a bowl of oatmeal and reading the paper. And I started repeating myself. I asked her the same question 3 times, which my mother knew to be very odd for me. And then I told her that I could not see. And so I experienced total blindness. And my mom immediately recognized my symptoms, the sudden onset, as being a sign of stroke. And so she dialed 9/11, EMS arrived, and by the time they arrived, my sight had actually returned. I never had paralysis. I never had a drooping face. I never had any of the usual symptoms of stroke. And so because of my age, the EMS team refused me transport and told my mom that I was probably having a reaction to some medication and that she should just close the door and let me sleep it off. And so my mom said, you know, I don't think so. And so she actually got me to the emergency room. Now, you know, many of the people in our audience today recognize when you walk into an ER, you're not given priority because of triage protocols, right? And so I was not only able to walk in, I made the fatal mistake of being able to also write the check for the copay. And so I was considered to have, you know, a high level of functionality, and so I was told to wait. And I waited, and I waited, and I waited over 3 hours in ER, which is really critical in stroke care, because you have a limited window of time to receive TPA, and that window is 4 hours. And so by the time I actually got examined, I was outside of the window for treatment. And so fortunately for me, my primary deficit seemed to be some long-term memory loss. But interesting, because we do not have annual stroke assessments in this country, it took me 8 years to realize how extensive my memory loss was. Because I don't know if you caught when I was telling my story, I have no firsthand recollection of the stroke event. I can only repeat what my mother said happened. And stroke survivors come in 2 varieties. Those who can describe in tremendous detail the sense of the paralysis that they felt come over their bodies, or you remember nothing. And I'm the nothing person. I have no recall of the stroke event.
You must have been so scared. I mean, you're 43 years old. You're in the ER. They're not admitting you. How did you finally get admitted? How did they finally say, hey, something's going on. We need to let her in.
Well, it's important to share, too, that my blood pressure on that day was 110 over 70. You know, near perfect. I was running 5K races. I've always had a healthy diet. And so finally someone suggested, maybe we need to do a CAT scan. And so, you know, ultimately that is the only, you know, diagnostic that really determines whether or not, you know, a stroke has occurred. And so once the CAT scan came back, wow, everyone, you know, was really surprised, and everything got in high gear, and oh my God, I can't believe this woman had a stroke and she was right here in ER for all this time. And so that's what prompted the admission. And so I ended up, I was very fortunate. I was one of those people, I got admitted. I actually stayed in the hospital for 7 days, which is an extended stay for a stroke by today's standards. And I transitioned from a heparin drip to Levonox and then to Coumadin. And I was on Coumadin therapy for 5 years before it took me that long to overwhelm my neurologist with research studies showing that I could be transitioned to aspirin because I had no other symptoms. I had no other occurrences. I had no TIAs or any other incidents over this past 15 years.
We're talking to Amy Edmonds, the founder and CEO of Young Stroke. I want to transition now to what you did post-stroke. So,
okay.
You know, you're an amazing, courageous woman, and you decided that this was not going to let you down or keep you down. So what did you get through your rehab, you get through your recovery, what did you do next?
Well, the next thing I did was try to find a support group with people that look like myself. I must have gone through 6 or 7 support groups where everyone in the room had gray hair, and none of them wanted to discuss issues that were important to me. No one wanted to talk about returning to work. No one wanted to talk about sexuality. No one wanted to talk about children and the responsibilities of parenting or any of those types of topics. And that I came to understand through my studies is simply because in America, we had been very focused on stroke being an end-of-life experience. And as such, it was more than sufficient for most stroke support groups to just focus on making the patient comfortable because, you know, they're already 75, 80 years old, and so they may have another 5 or 10 years. Let's just keep everybody comfortable, fluff the pillow, and pass them the remote. Well, when you're 30, 40, and even 20 years old having a stroke, you can conceivably live another 50, 60, 70 years. And I tell you, you know, the fact that you had a stroke, you just say, so what? You know, I still got a life to live. And being able to toilet yourself and to wash your face is no longer sufficient. You want to have a meaningful life experience. And so in many regards, stroke among young adults is redefining the way that we accept rehabilitation today. We are asking rehabilitation to take it to a higher standard. We want more. It's, you know, we want to learn how to regain, you know, employment on the other side. And there are very few rehab centers that even provide an integrated system of care. That is a new model of care that is struggling to come into play here in America. And they're only, the only program that I'm aware of that has actively launched is at Tufts Medical Center in Boston, the SAYA program with Dr. Lester Lung, and there's such a need for young stroke patients to not just have the rehab, but for there to be integrated services with social services in a much higher level. And so that's what the Tufts Medical Program seeks to do by bringing a lot of the social services actually on site into the hospital to help meet the special needs of this population.
And so, you know, you went to these support groups, you found that you were kind of an anomaly, that there weren't young folks mm-hmm. like you in there. And then you went back to school. Can we learn a little bit more about what your not dissertation,
right.
but you know
right,
what I'm
right,
talking
right.
about.
Okay. Yeah. So when I was in graduate school and I'm going through all of the literature, one of the countries that really showcased for me was the United Kingdom. And in the United Kingdom, there was an organization that was started back in 1976 by an attorney who had experienced stroke in London. And, you know, in the UK, the attorneys wear the garb, you know, the wigs and the robes and everything. And so this gentleman had actually experienced a stroke in court. And so he got taken to the hospital in full garb, and no one took him seriously. Not only was he young, they assumed that he was in costume. And so he was so flustered by that experience that he created in the United Kingdom an organization called Different Strokes. And so I was very inspired by his story, and I was saying that in America, you know, I wanted people to fully focus on the word young stroke, and so that's why I named my organization Young Stroke. It's one word, no space between the two, and so that's how we all came to be.
And so let's talk a little bit about Young Stroke.
Okay.
What are you doing over there at Young Stroke?
Okay, well, Young Stroke is a patient advocacy organization, and as such, we do a lot of behind-the-scenes kinds of work. So, for example, most recently, I'm most proud of the fact that we just partnered last month to collaborate with Powerphone, which is the largest online training company for emergency responders and dispatchers. And we created a training module that included information about stroke in young adults. Because imagine a dispatcher receiving a call and they ask the age of the patient, and if they were to say that the patient is 22 or the patient is 32, but they're displaying signs of stroke, you see, for many places in this country, the dispatcher would never think that stroke was even an option, because we are still, for many scenarios, we are still focused on stroke as being that end-of-life experience, that something only happens if the patient is 60 and older. And so that creates a huge disconnect for treatment for younger stroke patients. And too often, younger stroke survivors get caught in a misdiagnosis, just as I did. And because time is brain, it's critically important that the diagnosis be made correctly in the field before that patient even gets to the hospital, so that the hospital can be prepped and prepared to receive the patient to get that TPA that I referenced in my own experience that I missed.
So we have this phone training. What, mm-hmm. Are we seeing that it's changing the culture of how they respond?
Or? Well, what's interesting is that training will be launched during this coming summer.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's very cool, but isn't it also very pathetic that it's 2017 and that need has not already been met? Back in 2015, Young Stroke, as a patient advocacy organization, we hosted the first international conference on stroke in young adults. We were supported by Mayo Clinic as our lead medical underwriter, and I think that was a fabulous thing that we were able to do. But again, how pathetic that in 2015, no one had saw fit to even convene a meeting to discuss this global trend. So there's good news, you know, and there's bad news, but I'm delighted to have been, you know, a part of the reason that this issue is being brought to the forefront. And one other point of significance is we repeated that conference in 2016, and the 2016 event received funding from the NIH. And so that was the first time that NIH had actually put funding behind this issue. And so we would like to think that we are really helping to raise awareness. And then in my home state of South Carolina, and I would love to challenge our audience, you know, how many people in your own home state can share what percentage of your stroke population is impacted under the age of 65. Many states don't even tease out the numbers, you see? And so for all of the health disparities that we have in South Carolina, I'm really proud of the fact that our state health department this year, 2017, very first time they have now added that information onto our state fact sheets. And so, for example, we know that more than half the strokes in the state of South Carolina for the past 5 years have occurred among those people under the age of 65. And that should be driving care decisions. That should be driving health messaging. That should be driving our public service campaigns, you see? And South Carolina isn't unique. This is a global problem.
Well, you know, every trail takes a pioneer to blaze it and open it up. So we're glad that you're doing that. You mentioned March 31st. What's so special about that date?
March 31st is a red letter date in stroke care history. On March 31st, the World Health Organization officially relabeled, reclassified stroke from being a cardiovascular disease as a neurological disease. For 52 years, stroke has been classified as cardiovascular. And that's significant because that classification is what drives the DRG codes, you see? That classification is what drives the way that the research dollars get funded. And so in short, if the neurologist, and more specifically, if a cardiologist could not connect your stroke to some cardio dysfunction, stroke patients have been denied rehabilitation services. They've been denied anything neurological because of the classification for 52 years. And so I'm very, very proud to have been serving as a member of the board of the World Stroke Organization, who lobbied the World Health Organization for the past 5 years to try to get that changed. And the intersection of health and politics is just amazing. It's just amazing. And, you know, to think that this right has finally been, this wrong has finally been righted, you know, it's just a tremendous step for stroke patients going forward.
So with all your advocacy and all the great work you're doing over at Young Stroke, what's next for that organization? What trail are you going to blaze next?
Well, our next project is actually to launch a global newsletter to really support the discussion around stroke in young adults globally. We have some tremendous initiatives that are being started in a variety of countries. And at this point, we just need to stay connected to let other people know what's possible. And we also need to keep this issue very much in the forefront. You know, I really appreciate the audience that this message is going to be aired to, and this audience can truly appreciate the fact that, you know, we are experiencing a generation of young people that have consumed far more sugar and far more salt than any previous generation, and we are starting to acknowledge that there are medical outcomes that we never could have predicted, you know, previously. And I think that there has been a tremendous eagerness to want to embrace young stroke as being an outcome of lifestyle. And truth be told, it is not always lifestyle choices, and I'm certainly the poster child for that. What we are noticing is that young stroke is resulting as a consequence of more hemorrhagic strokes. We're having more aneurysms. We're discovering, you know, more blood disorders. It's not just a pregnancy issue. It's not just an oral contraceptive issue. But the biggest mystery in stroke among young adults is the fact that more than 30% of the strokes are cryptogenic, like mine, unknown causes. And what does that mean? It means we need to invest more in research, because there certainly is a reason, we just haven't found it.
And if my audience here or at home want to learn more about young stroke and the work that you're doing, how can they find you guys?
Well, very easy. You may go online. Our website is youngstroke.org, or you may contact me personally, amy.edmunds, and that's Edmunds with a U, E-D-M-U-N-D-S, at youngstroke.org.
And we'll make sure that we have all those links available on our podcast notes. Now, as we're coming to the end of our time here, do you have any closing thoughts that you want to share with our audience?
I would love for the audience to share the message that they've learned from me today, just any part of it. If you would just share it with at least one other person, just one person, if every person would tell just one other, we would make great strides in going forward and raising awareness about young stroke in America.
And that is great words of wisdom. We thank you so much, Amy Edmunds, for being here. We had Amy Edmunds, the founder and CEO of Young Stroke. We really appreciate the work that you're doing in the field to help other people like yourself.
Thank you so much.
All right, and thank you all for listening. This has been the Patient Activation Network podcast. I'm Matt Cavallo. We look forward to bringing you another inspirational story soon.